Hey everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It's December 14th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. And yesterday when we did the show, I said, well, maybe we won't have a show tomorrow if nothing interesting happens. And then something interesting happened yesterday and got reported on by Reuters and then started kind of making its way through the ether this morning. At least that's when I woke up to it. Although, admittedly, I fell asleep at like 10:30 last night, like an old person. So, I might have missed a news cycle, but here we are anyway to talk about it. Get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy, and I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. So, Jon Rahm was in Spain on Wednesday. That's his home country. And he was in the city of Bilbao to receive an award from a private club called the Sociedad Bilbaína. And he was supposed to receive the Dama Bilbaína 2023 prize. So an award that this private club that had been founded in 1839 in Basque country that was going to be presented to him in recognition of his golf career. And he showed up to the event, and lo and behold, there were media there. And according to Reuters, there appeared to be more media people than the select audience of presumably members of this club that were there. So Rahm shows up and he's surprised and he says, quote, I didn't think there would be any cameras and that it would be a bit more intimate, end quote. And that I don't have total video of this. I've got to try to find the video of it if it's possible. And I don't know if it is. It might have to be Spanish language video, but and I mean, obviously this is going to be in Spanish because he's speaking in Spain. But he says, you know, basically expresses his dismay that there are media there. And he said, I can't speak to you. And his quote, presuming this is a translation, but the quote from Reuters is, I am under very strict instructions not to do public events, which I have imposed on myself a little bit for myself and for the change I have given to the world of golf in the last week. Then he was asked if he was planning to give an interview, and he yelled, no! And the Reuters story yelled as no exclamation point. So assuming that he kind of yelled, I was like, no chance! And then added, quote, there will be nothing until February. I'm not allowed to, end quote. And then he goes on, the Reuters piece talks about his signing with Liv and all that stuff. And then he gave some remarks, at least enough remarks to accept this award. And he said he described, the Reuters story says he described himself as, quote, a normal person. He says, quote, I don't consider that what I do is much different and that I am more or less important than the rest. The only thing is that I'm seen on TV right now and that's it. Hopefully a little less so in the future, end quote. That last part's really interesting. So what I have found in the very brief history of LIV Golf existing is that players vastly underestimate how bad the reaction is to when they sign with LIV. Yes, there are people who like LIV, who are for LIV, who are agnostic to LIV's existence at a minimum. And those people are either welcoming or at least like, hey, you made your choice. It is what it is. But there are far more people, especially online, right? I mean, being online is a great place to complain because you can do it anonymously and there are no consequences for you. And I've been on the receiving end of that over the years. It's not fun, but definitely not to this extent that Rahm or any other player has gone to LIV. And the reaction is a cascade of negativity, of you sold out. I mean, ranging from politely you sold out, you've ruined your legacy, to just straight up F you. I mean, that happens a lot. Happened a lot here yesterday in the D.C. area when Ted Leonsis and his Monumental Sports Group, the guy who owns the Washington Capitals and the Washington Wizards, struck a deal, at least in principle, with the Virginia government to move the team from downtown D.C., both teams from downtown D.C. to Northern Virginia in a total sweetheart deal for taxpayers. A lot of reaction from people in the D.C. area was straight up F you or you're dead to me. I mean, those kinds of blunt, frankly, mean reactions. But that's what people feel in their heart. So that has been coming Rom's way for a week now. And it's not pleasant. It's not fun. Even if one person does it to you, it's not fun to be told that by someone you don't know and you can't identify. And they're not going to have a conversation with you. They're just going to say their piece and that be it. It's an uneasy feeling. So in that sense, I empathize with Rom and how he probably feels, and that hopefully a little less so in the future bit. But what I do find interesting about his quote is that at first he says, "I am under very strict instructions not to do public events." Then he says, "I've imposed it on myself." And then he says, "I'm not allowed to." So in the span of 50 words, he says, "Well, someone's told me I can't do this." Then he says, "Well, actually, no, I told myself I can't do this." And then at the end says, "Someone's told me not to do this," basically. It's a really weird quote. And maybe some of it is lost in translation. So I think you have to kind of put that precursor out there before you say anything. But the way that he said, I'm not doing anything until February, I think that tells you everything you need to know. LIV Golf contracts, at least the ones that I've seen, have an explicit clause that say a player cannot do a media appearance, a public appearance, anything like that without the express approval of LIV Golf, which means you can't do an interview, you can't do a public event, anything like that. So almost certainly, that is the instruction given to Rom under his contract. You're going to take this $300 million and you're going to go away for a while. You're going to show up here, you're going to take these pictures, do this interview with Faraday, do your social posts, go on Fox News with Brett there, and then we don't want to see you at all until you play LIV Golf in February. Doesn't that seem weird? And I don't mean that as just like, oh, a muzzling thing is weird. That's weird too. But as a business, that's weird. To go, all right, well, we've signed the reigning Masters champion, one of the three best players on the planet, the best player in golf the last 5 years, and we don't want him talking about this at all until February. How do you get any rub off of that? How do you build up your product, if that's the intent of this, and we'll get to that in a minute. If the intent of signing Rom is ostensibly to grow your product and get more people to pay attention to it, get people to invest in it, time and money, don't you want him talking about it as much as humanly possible? Don't you want him out there going, yeah, I love LIV, can't wait to start my team or take over a team or whatever it is, have teammates here, you know, do an exhibition, do interviews with, even if you did it with only friendly outlets, and I'm looking from LIV's perspective here, wouldn't you want that guy out there, your $300 million at a minimum acquisition? And then to then tell the guy, look, we don't want to hear or see from you in the months of December and January. Just go away, enjoy your time with your family, and please do not appear in public or give an interview, or that will jeopardize your $300 million. That is weird. And I think that offers some insight into what this is really about. It's not about the product. It is not about LIV Golf the product. It is about LIV Golf the threat. That is why Jon Rahm got signed. Because Yasser Al-Rumayyan wants to get a deal done, and he's willing to spend additional money to make sure that happens. And that additional money is going to Jon Rahm directly, or may have already started going to him. Who knows how much already went to him once signing? Probably a lot. Because if Rahm was smart and his agent was smart, and they know that LIV Golf could, in any percentage, go away as a result of a potential deal here, they want that money up front. So maybe they got it. Don't know. See the contract someday, probably. So, if you're muzzling Rom and you don't want to talk about LIV, then he's the bargaining chip. His purchase, his acquisition, it's not about him talking about how great LIV Golf is. It is about him showing up and shutting up for the events, and they can use his presence to ultimately get the PGA Tour to do what they want. That is the point of this whole thing. And it's a real shame that it has to work out this way for LIV and for Rom. Specifically for Rom, because Rom is a really thoughtful guy. You hear him in news conferences and interviews and situations where he talks about himself or golf or issues in the game, he's really thoughtful. You may not agree with him. You don't have to agree with him. But he does come from a place of genuine thought and care about what he says and how he acts. And now all of a sudden, he can't do that anymore. He can't do it. Now, if he shows up in an interview for his first live event, which is February 2nd, it tees off first, when that happens, then how does that go? Can he say he can't answer anything? No, it'll wind up like potentially like a Graham McDowell situation, who got sent out to get roasted after his comments at that Live Golf London event, the first one, where he said, you know, I'm basically kind of apologizing for the Saudi regime, and it's not good. It's not good, and that the backlash to that has been massive for Graham McDowell. I mean, I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. So you got that part of it, and I wonder if that will happen to Rahm. You know, Rahm did all of the talking points in the interview with Faraday. He did all the talking points in the release, the social posts, the interview with Brett Baer. He went on with Pat McAfee and talked with him. I guess that was approved or lined up. I don't know, but you would presume. And then that's the extent of it. And the reaction has not been good. It just hasn't been. It hasn't been like, all right, well, we're all finally watching Live now. I don't know what they thought that was going to be. But clearly they didn't. They must have thought that wasn't going to be the reaction. The point then isn't to get him to play Live Golf and talk up the product. And it's just so disappointing. It just stinks. And I've mentioned the reasons why. But ultimately, we're not going to see Rahm in public again. Now, obviously, we're near the holidays. We're near Christmas and New Year's. And you wouldn't see golfers anyway. Like, that's not different. But if we were playing the PGA Tour still, he would then go and play in Hawaii and defend his title there, play at the Century. Then he would skip that. Then he would have probably played the American Express again, another opportunity to defend a title. And yeah, that's not happening. Instead, he will be absent from public view until February. And when that happens, there will be a lot of questions. It's not a good strategy from a media relations standpoint to tell your biggest player, your biggest acquisition, to not talk for 2 months, effectively 2 months, not fully 2 months, but basically 2 months. Because when he shows up and start the February 1st or January 31st, whenever he gets to Mayakoba and they have a news conference, they're going to have one with him. And people are going to have questions. Why haven't you spoken? What have you done with yourself the last 2 months? How do you feel about everything that's happened in reaction to your signing? Those questions aren't going away. And unless Liv wants to have an embarrassing situation, further embarrassing situation, where they go, we're not taking any questions about that, and trot him out, that's also bad. None of that is good. It would be better if they just said, look, you can defer your answers on these following topics. Don't answer stuff about that. Just here's your stock answer. Do some media training. And then everything else, here's what you can answer. Do a couple of interviews, go find your friendly outlets, and do them. And instead, you've now created a backlash. And you're like, well, you've muzzled the guy. That's not good. Please don't do that. It's just very bizarre to me. I understand it's a different strategy, but it's one that typically does not work. And ultimately, people who deny, and then eventually, you know, if they did something horrible, you know, a scandal type thing. I mean, this is about money and how you feel about the investor group, the Saudis, behind this product. So that's the scandal. It's not like you committed a crime necessarily. You didn't do that. But when you have one of these scandal situations, deny, and then show up and then say, I want to talk for real, it almost never goes well. There's never a situation where you're like, oh, well, you know, I just couldn't say anything. And now I'm going to admit the truth to you. So it's better to just be straight up with people from the get-go. And James Corrigan put it well. I'm sure other people have put it well. The day that Rahm signed, just say it's about the money. Don't say it's about anything else. Everyone knows the truth. You know the truth. You got to your number. You took it. If you just say that, I think the reaction is totally different. Worked for Dustin Johnson. Worked for Harold Varner III. Worked for Pat Perez. Just guys like, hey, they offered me a boatload of cash and they instantly deposited in my account the second that I signed. I'm happy. I have no compunction with where the money comes from. And that's the end of it. People generally leave those guys alone. But this isn't going to be left alone for John Rahm. So that's the situation in front of him. I found that very bizarre. I will try to find the video of this. I don't know if I'm going to be successful in finding it, but I will try to look for it on YouTube probably, or Spanish language media, once we're done recording this and see if I can find it. So, very interesting situation. Strange day for John Rahm as he goes from a guy that's really well outspoken to a guy that, just doesn't have the capacity to say anything contractually. All right, we'll go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back after this. If you're like me, you've wanted to buy gold for years. Lots of commercials out there, but who can you really trust? I don't want a bad investment, but didn't want to miss the boat either. Sound familiar? Fortunately, I've got great news. If you have an IRA or 401k and want to buy physical gold, eliminate fear and uncertainty from the process using the new Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist. It helps you evaluate and choose the best gold IRA company. I used it personally to vet Augusta Precious Metals, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Use this checklist to choose the best gold IRA company. Text to get your free Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist today. Text GOLF to 68592. Again, text GOLF to 68592. That's GOLF to 68592. Or go to AugustaPreciousMetals.com. All right, second story today is, again, related to this whole situation, the live stuff, but really it goes back to the PGA Tour and how much they are spending or were spending last year on legal fees and what that means to them or what that meant to them, what compelled them to go to the bargaining table. So Sportico was first to report this, but really it's getting a hold of the Form 990 for 2022 for the PGA Tour. The Form 990 is a federal tax document that not-for-profit organizations have to file, and it's basically their tax return. Even though they're not paying taxes, they have to detail executive pay, their assets, their balance sheet, what they spent money on, expenses, charitable giving, the asset, all this stuff. It's basically a report of, here's us as a nonprofit, and here's what we've got, here's what we've paid, here's what we owe, all that type of stuff. So the Form 990 is available. It gets processed and is made available publicly for every not-for-profit organization. Now, there are a variety of sites that you can find it on. You can search 2022 PGA Tour Inc. Form 990. I'm sure you'll find it. Sportico did a piece on it, and then the aggregators got a hold of it. But if you do want to get a full idea of what the PGA Tour's books look like, well, not a full idea, but a pretty good idea, you can get that from the Form 990, and you can read it year after year after year after year. And as part of that, they have to detail compensation. So Jay Monahan's compensation went up dramatically in 2022. And that was a big piece of it, between the basically $18 million that he got in compensation and then an additional $7 million in retirement benefits. I mean, the guy is paid a lot. And relative to the income of the PGA Tour from sponsorship and media deals and stuff, he's making bank. He's doing well for himself. And I'm willing to wager that's going to change quite a bit in 2024. However, that was 2022. So the 2023 year isn't over yet. We will get what they did this year about this time next year, because they'll file it in April. Then it's gone through. It's digitized, all that type of stuff, and made available in troves. And then you have to go through it all. And it's quite a process, but basically a year delay. So Sportico went and looked through it, and it turns out that the amount of money that the PGA Tour spent on legal fees and representation in 2021 was something in the area of $2.5 million, and in 2022 was 10 times that, basically. $20.5 million spent. And they explain it all. They explain the line item, recognizing that legal action, formal legal action in the courts, didn't start until August, right, when you had Taylor Gooch and Hudson Swafford. But you had three guys who sought to be able to get an injunction to play in the FedEx Cup playoffs because they had enough points to be in the top 125. And then also the players who moved from the PGA Tour and signed on to the lawsuit against the PGA Tour. And then LIV got involved and the players pulled out and it became LIV versus the PGA Tour. That's when the legal action started in the courts. However, it doesn't detail, and no tax return is going to detail this, when the PGA Tour first sought out legal help. And their attorneys are no joke, right? I mean, they're probably $1,000 to $2,000 an hour attorneys. These are people who have tremendous amounts of experience and are very well compensated. And so the lawsuit started in August, but the suspension started before that. And when the suspension started, probably as LIV was announced, that's about when the involvement of attorneys, outside attorneys, probably got involved. And they probably went and sought them and said, hey, what are our options under our membership rules? Can we suspend them? Can we terminate their membership? Can we, you know, all these different options. They had to have been weighed with attorneys. So I'm sure there was a fair amount of billable hours spent on just that question, how to react to that piece of it. And then from there, how do you enforce it? You know, the letters that you get from Greg Norman, the Surely You Jest letter that was made public, you know, stuff like that. All that stuff, any kind of reaction to it, any kind of emails, a lot of those things require, at that stage, legal vetting, legal approval. Because if you say something dumb or do something dumb, that could come back to bite you in the butt. And that's one of the important things about this. So $20 million, $18 million more spent on legal fees. And that's approximately half of a year's worth of legal fees. So then you get to this year, those legal fees likely continue, even though they were pulling ahead in terms of legal precedent, that they were going to have an opportunity to perhaps depose Yasser Al-Rumayyan and get documents and discovery. And I'm sure they were going through what discovery they would have to deal with on their side. It could have been more. Probably was more. It was probably closer to $25 million for the portion of this year until they got to the agreement, you know, the May 30th signing of the agreement. And even then, that probably kicked off more law stuff. So through this year, I would guess, and we'll see in about a year, but my guess is they've spent $40 to $50 million in legal fees. So if you estimate that all together, they're in the, on the low end, absolute low end, $50 million. On the absolute high end, probably $80 million in legal fees. I would guess somewhere in between there, not low or high. But that's a lot of money to spend when you typically spend a couple of million dollars a year on legal fees. And a lot of that stuff revolves around contracts with different sponsors and media organizations and the players and just stuff you kind of have to touch up on and having in-house attorneys and those types of things. That's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. I realize the PGA Tour makes the better part of $750 million in rights fees every year. So while that doesn't seem like a lot of $750 million, that's still a lot. That's still a lot of money they weren't intending on spending. And that they knew if the lawsuits continued, they could spend $50 to $75 million a year for years on a lawsuit. So if this thing dragged on forever, you could be looking at somewhere in the area of $150 to $200 million worth of legal fees. And that's just not something that is tenable to the PGA Tour. At a certain point in that process, the membership would have found out because Form 990s become public, or someone would have found out on the board or what have you. This would have gotten out and the players would have gone, just make a deal. This would have happened eventually, almost certainly unless things went so well in Discovery, and I don't get the sense that it would have for both sides, that it went so one-sidedly well for the PGA Tour that the Saudis were just like, we're out, we're done, we don't want to deal with this, we don't want to deal with the golf stuff, we're just done. That would have been the only way that it wouldn't have gone down the line like this. And you think about how much $20 million a year means relative to the $2 million they spend on legal fees, but also think about that relative to the income of the PGA Tour, and then think about what that protracted lawsuit in legal fees would have meant to the PGA Tour compared to what Liv and the Saudis just spent on Jon Rahm. One guy. Now it kind of puts it into perspective. They were willing to spend more on acquiring one guy to make the deal they want than the PGA Tour probably would have been willing to spend and would have had to spend on legal fees in a protracted legal fight. And it would not have been tenable. It would not have lasted. There you go. That's the difference between the money available to the Saudis and the money available currently to the PGA Tour. Now, if they come to the agreement with the Strategic Sports Group, they've got a lot more at their disposal. If they add the Saudis in, it all comes together. It's even probably more than that. But that's the difference in the money war. That's the difference. And for whatever battle you could have fought in terms of reputation, invoking the Saudis' reputation, invoking 9/11, whatever you wanted to invoke, ultimately, even with the public approval on your side, you weren't going to have enough financial ammo to beat back the Saudis. It just wasn't possible. So a lot of people kind of eyes pop at that number, but think about how much more they spent this year and how much more they could have spent in subsequent years had it all kind of kept going the way that it had been going. That's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks for spending some time with me. I appreciate it. We probably have a show tomorrow because I keep saying we're not going to have a show if nothing interesting happens, but I'm sure something weird or interesting will happen. And if not, we'll find something interesting and weird to talk about for a few minutes. We'll have the first round of Q School in the books. It's supposed to be 55 degrees with 25 mile per hour gusts all day. I'm sure it's going to be crazy. And we also then have a preview for the PNC Championship, which starts on Saturday in Orlando. And they've got the Mauritius Open going on, the DP World Tour. Louis Oosthuizen's first golf course open hosting the event. Antoine Rosner, defending champion, lit it up, shot 10 under par in the opening round. So we'll have a little bit to talk about that tomorrow in the event that nothing kind of bigger, bolder happens. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. You can find me on YouTube and Facebook at Ryan Ballingy Golf. Thanks so much for spending time with me. We will talk to you next time on Two Off the First.